Good morning. Like Tim said, it is good to have Debbie back. Dean is back too. We're not quite as excited about that, but it's okay that he's back too, I guess, right? So it is March, which means it's March Madness. I love March Madness. It is probably my favorite sporting event of the entire year. And this year in particular, I was extremely excited about the tournament for a couple of reasons. One was that there wasn't a tournament last year, so I was just excited to have it back and get to watch the games, especially those first few days where, you know, there's schools that you've never heard of knocking off the Blue Bloods and stuff like that. It's just always fun. But really, the reason that I was excited was because Illinois, my team, was awesome this year. They came in as the number two team in the country. They have two of the best players in the country. They had won 14 of 15 games, and they had knocked off a bunch of really good teams leading up to the tournament. So I was convinced that this was our year. We were going to cut down the nets. I mean, in Sharpie almost, I was filling in my bracket, right? It's like Illinois. They're doing it. And I should have known, being an Illinois fan for 25 years, that was not going to happen. They lost the second game they played to a team they should have beat. And when Mallory asked me about the picture for the front of the bulletin, we're talking about disappointment today, I told her you should just put the Illinois logo on the front of the bulletin because that's what they do, is they provide me disappointment year after year. I think Steve knows what I'm talking about apparently today too. We don't talk about that either. So, we've all faced disappointment. And I think the reality is that we face disappointment in much greater ways than just a basketball game, too. There are things in our lives that happen. There are circumstances that come about that greatly disappoint us. Maybe it's disappointment in other people. You expect them to act a certain way, or you just expect things from them and they let you down. Maybe, if you were being honest, you would just say there are moments that you've had in your life where, frankly, you're just disappointed in God. Maybe you don't think he's listening to your prayers, things aren't happening the way that you would expect them to, it just doesn't seem like he's listening. And there are moments where you're just discouraged and you don't understand why things are not playing out the way that you hope they would. The Bible defines disappointment like this in Proverbs 13:12. It says that hope delayed makes the heart sick. I think that's a pretty interesting definition of disappointment, right? Because disappointment is when reality doesn't match up to our hopes or our expectations or our wishes. We want something to happen and it doesn't happen that way, and our hope is delayed, like it says. Mallory and I were in, I think it was Ross's a few days ago, and as we were walking around, we passed some other customers that saw a sign, you know, just a sign that you would hang on your wall, and it had the word hope on it, and this person commented to her friend something like, man, I hate that word. I hate when people say, I hope things work out, and she just went on about that, and I thought, at first, I was like, that's a weird hot take, right? But the more I thought about it, that's pretty sad, right? I mean, I have to believe I don't know this person, I've just passed him for 2 seconds in the store, right? I have to think that something has happened in her life, probably multiple things, that has left her just not wanting to hope anymore. Maybe she's been disappointed so often that she's just at this point where if I don't get my expectations up, then they're not gonna get let down, and it's better just to not to hope any longer. And that's a sad reality, but I think in moments we've all been there before. And so we're going to look this morning at the character of Samuel. We're going to see how he dealt with disappointment. There were things that happened in his life that caused him great disappointment. We're going to look at that and see really kind of one observation about disappointment, a couple of dangers to disappointment, and then ultimately how we can have victory over disappointment. So I'm just going to run through the story of Samuel pretty quickly. We're going to hop around to a few different chapters. I would encourage you to read these throughout this week because we're just going to touch on them briefly. But Samuel was a judge. We've been talking about some different judges the last few weeks. And Kevin last week talked about Ruth, and he mentioned though she wasn't a judge, she was her life took place in the same time frame. And Samuel is really kind of the last of the judges, at least the last of the good judges. He appoints two of his sons to take over for him and be the leader of Israel. And that's where we're going to pick up in the story. That appointment of his sons doesn't go very well. And so in verse 3 of chapter 8, it says this: "However, his sons did not walk in his ways. They turned toward dishonest profit, took bribes, and perverted justice. So all the elders of Israel gathered together and went to Samuel at Ramah. They said to him, 'Look, you are old, and your sons do not walk in your ways. Therefore, appoint a king to judge us the same as all the other nations have.' When they said, 'Give us a king to judge us,' Samuel considered their demand wrong, so he prayed to the Lord." So here we have the situation. Samuel is trying to pass on this leadership over Israel to his sons. They're not good leaders. And because of that, the nation kind of revolts. They come to Samuel and they're like, "Hey, we don't want any more judges. We're tired of that. We want a king." And God's response to Samuel is that, "Hey, they're not really rejecting you. Don't take this personally. Don't feel bad about this. They're really rejecting me." And what he says in these verses following is that ultimately they're rejecting you the same way that they've rejected me since I brought them out of Egypt. It just keeps happening over and over again that they turn their back on me. And their request for a king is not what is wrong. In Deuteronomy, Moses actually describes how one day Israel will have a king over them. The problem is the request is not wrong that they ask for a king, it's that they're turning their back on God. Really what they're saying is, "Hey, we don't want to be the chosen people anymore. We don't want to be the example to the rest of the nations of what God is supposed to do within our group. We really just want to be on our own. We want a king like every other nation." And so God reassures Samuel, "Hey, don't feel bad that they're rejecting you. They're really rejecting me." But I think we can understand Samuel's disappointment. He sees them turning their back, and he has to believe that as someone who's tried to turn them to God and lead them, that he can see as they're walking away that this isn't going to end well for them. And God tells them exactly that it's not going to end well. But God does what they want. He grants their wish to have a king, and so he raises up a man named Saul. And Saul looked the part. He was, the Bible says, head and shoulders above every other man. He was handsome, he was brave, he was a good soldier, and his kingship started off really well. He won some battles and things were going really well, and in fact his heart was in the right place at the beginning. It says that his heart turned toward God and he started off really strong. But pretty quickly, his kingship started to go downhill. Again, another area of disappointment for Samuel. In chapter 13, the first thing that happens that causes God to take the kingship away from Saul is that they're about to face the Philistines in battle. And Samuel has told him, "Hey, I'm going to come meet you after 7 days on the front lines." And it's been 7 days and Samuel hasn't showed up. And the troops are getting nervous because they're about to have this battle and their priest hasn't been there to help offer the sacrifice before. And the troops are starting to get so nervous that they're deserting. And so Saul takes it upon himself, says, "Okay, well, I'll just offer this sacrifice." And the problem is that Saul is a king, but he's not a priest, and he has no business offering the sacrifice. And Samuel shows up and he tells him exactly that. But the real issue is not just that he offers a sacrifice. The real issue is that his heart is starting to turn away. He's starting to probably think of himself a little bit more importantly than he should have as the king, and his heart is starting to turn away from God. And so God tells him at that moment, "Hey, this kingship that I've granted you, I'm about to take it away from you and give it to someone who has a heart after my own heart, speaking of David. So again, another disappointment for Samuel. This person that he's tried to invest in is not working out. One other quick part of Samuel's story. In chapter 15, Saul has been given instructions to face the Amalekites, and he is actually going to be passing God's judgment onto this nation. His instructions are, you're to wipe out the entire nation. Do not leave anyone alive. Do not leave any livestock alive. This is a judgment on God's part for the nation. The instructions are clear, but what happens is that Saul believes that partial obedience is obedience, when ultimately partial obedience is actually disobedience. So picking up in verse 7, it says this, "Then Saul struck down the Amalekites from Havilah all the way to Shur, which is next to Egypt. He captured King Agag of Amalek alive, but he completely destroyed all the rest of the people with the sword. Saul and the troops spared Agag and the best of the sheep, goats, cattle, and choice animals, as well as the young rams and the best of everything else. They were not willing to destroy them, but they did destroy all the worthless and unwanted things. Then the word of the Lord came to Samuel, 'I regret that I made Saul king, for he has turned away from following me and has carried out my instructions.' So Samuel became angry and cried out to the Lord all night." Again, kind of the final bit of disappointment in this story of Saul and Samuel. Saul disobeys. He doesn't wipe out everyone like God instructs him to do. And so Samuel comes, and actually this is the last time that they'll even see each other. This friendship, this mentorship that they've had, it says after this that Samuel leaves and he doesn't even see Saul again in his lifetime. That's kind of how fractured this relationship is. And so we can understand Samuel's disappointment. And it says he cried out to God all night long. So here's the first observation for us this morning about disappointment. And that is simply this. It's okay to be disappointed. It's okay to even be disappointed in God. It's okay to not understand what he's doing. It's okay to vent your frustration to him. Life is going to happen. Things are going to work out in ways that you would not expect or in ways that you would not hope for. And there's no point in trying to hide the fact that you wish things were different. The Bible is full of passages that are prayers talking about exactly this type of thing. In Psalm 88, just listen to the words of this writing and just how powerful and how heartfelt these are. I don't know that I've ever prayed prayers very close to this before. It says, "Lord, God of my salvation, I cry out before you day and night. May my prayer reach your presence. Listen to my cry. For I have had enough troubles, and my life is near Sheol. I am counted among those going down to the pit. I am like a man without strength, abandoned among the dead. I am like the slain lying in the grave, whom you no longer remember, and who are cut off from your care. You have put me in the lowest part of the pit, in the darkest places, in the depths. Your wrath weighs heavily on me. You have overwhelmed me with all your waves. You have distanced my friends from me. You have made me repulsive to them. I am shut in and cannot go out. My eyes are worn out from crying. Lord, I cry out to you all day long. I spread out my hands to you." It's a pretty bold prayer, right? It's basically saying, God, you've done this to me. You've put me here. You've put me in this deep pit. My friends have turned their back on me. And he's just pouring out his heart to God of his disappointment of his situation. And whenever we face those situations and those circumstances in our lives, it's okay to react the same way. It's okay to pour out our heart in the same way to God. Don't think that it's sinful or be ashamed to do that. Because the reality is we don't talk to someone like that unless we're pretty close to them, right? It's in these moments when we are discouraged and when we feel let down and we come to God in this way that he comforts us and that he listens to us. And ultimately, that's where we grow in our intimacy with him. Don't be afraid to share your disappointment with God. Up to a point, at least. The very next thing that we see in this story of Samuel takes place in verse 1 of chapter 16. God comes to Samuel and he says this, "How long are you going to mourn for Saul, since I have rejected him as king over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and go. I am sending you to Jesse of Bethlehem, because I have selected a king from his sons." So God lets Samuel mourn. He lets him cry out, like it says, all night. But he does come to him eventually and he says, "All right, hey Samuel, it's time to move on." And here's two things, the dangers of disappointment that I mentioned. The first one is this. If we fixate on our disappointment, if we focus on it too much, it will distract us from worship. I don't know about you, but whenever things don't go the way that I want them to, I'm much more prone to pout or complain or just feel bad about myself and the way that things work out. I'm much more likely to do that than I am to turn to God and worship. And I think that's our natural reaction. We get distracted and our eyes lose their focus of where they should be. And we fixate on the problem and the disappointment that has let us down. In Job, there is a great example, though, of doing the opposite. The story of Job takes place and starts where servants come to Job and they're like, "Hey, thieves have come in and stolen your camels." And before that one is really even done talking, another one comes in, "Hey, thieves have come in and they've stolen the oxen." And right after that, another servant comes in and is like, "Hey, this fire came down and it burned up all the sheep." And right after that, someone comes in, "Hey, your sons and your daughters were in this accident. The house fell in on them and no one has survived. I alone have come to give you this news." And Job's response is this in chapter 1, verse 20. "Then Job stood up, tore his robe, and shaved his head. He fell to the ground and worshiped, saying, 'Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will leave this life. The Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord.'" Job mourns, he tears his clothes, he shaves his head, he feels the disappointment, but he doesn't let that distract him from who God is. He turns to him in worship. And if we're not careful, we'll miss those opportunities. If we fixate too much on the problems and the things that let us down in our circumstances, then we miss the chance to worship God in those moments. The second danger of disappointment is this. Not only will it distract us from worship, but it distracts us from kingdom work. The thing that is so great about that verse we read where God comes to Samuel and tells him, "Hey, listen, it's time to go again." We can understand Samuel's disappointment in Saul letting him down. A friend, someone that he's been trying to mentor, hasn't worked out. But God comes and he says, "Hey, listen, I know that this person that you anointed as the king, he's been a flop, but I have more work for you to do. Get up and you're going to anoint another king. And this one is the one that I wanted all along. This is the one that has a heart after my own. So don't sit there in pity, because I still have some work for you to do." And the same thing is true for us. If we let it, disappointment will keep us from doing the kingdom work that God has for us. There are a few things that I know without a shadow of a doubt. But one of them is this. Through ministry, through your time, sitting with people in a church, there's always going to be people who walk away. There's always going to be people who you invest in and who you walk beside. Sometimes they're just gone. And there's no explanation. You can't figure it out. But they just turn their back and they're not there anymore. And if you let it, that will keep you, though, from reaching the ones that are still around. There's always more to do. God always has more people to reach. The harvest is plentiful. There are always more people to minister to. We can't let our disappointment in our circumstances keep us from that. There is always, always more work to do. And so God gives him these plans, and he tells him, I have this work for you to do. And this is really the best part. This is really what we need to look and take from this morning. The way that we have victory over our disappointment, if we recognize these dangers, the way that we have victory over that disappointment is to understand this. Even when things don't go the way that we think they should, even when our hope is delayed, like Proverbs says, God is still sovereign. David was always the plan. Samuel is disappointed in Israel's rebellion. Samuel is disappointed in Saul and the way that he has disobeyed and not been a good king. But that disappointment, that rejection, that disobedience was never going to stop God's plan. David was always going to be the king because through David was coming Jesus. And in your disappointment, please understand, when things aren't going the way that you think they should, whenever your hope is delayed, God is still sovereign. And so when the test results come back the way that you wish they wouldn't have, God is still sovereign. When your family relationships are still fractured, even though you wish that they were mended, God is still sovereign. When your family is not growing the way that you wish it would, God is still sovereign. When your job is letting you down and it's sucking the life out of you and you had high hopes for this promotion or for this new opportunity and it's just not working, God is still sovereign. And when hope is delayed and you are disappointed, God is still sovereign. Nothing will stop his plan and his purpose. December 7th, 1941 is a date I think a lot of you probably recognize. The man leading the attack on Pearl Harbor that day from Japan was a man named Mitsuo Fukida. He was relatively young to be in such a prominent position, leading this important battle. And as he did, the attack was, from Japan's standpoint, a huge success. They sunk many ships, many Americans lost their lives that day, and so Fukida returned to Japan a hero. Another man in this story is a man named Jacob DeShazer. He was at a base in Oregon. While this attack was happening, he was peeling potatoes, and the news report of what was happening came over the radio, and at that moment, he vowed that he was going to get revenge for this attack. His opportunity came just a few short months later in what was called the Doolittle Raid. In April, he volunteered to fly this mission that was really just meant to be a morale booster. The damage that was going to be inflicted was not anything very substantial, but it was just supposed to boost the troops. And in that regard, it was a success. They flew their mission, but the problem was that on his way back, his plane began to run out of fuel. He had to evacuate over enemy territory, and he and other American troops were captured. DeShazer became a prisoner of war for 40 months. 34 of those months were spent in solitary confinement, almost 3 years in a room by himself. And it was in those moments that he began to reflect, and he looked at himself and the hatred that he had for his enemy, and he wondered about the hatred that they could have for him. And he began to wonder, how could all this hate exist? Where does all this hate come from? And he thought back to some lessons that he remembered as a kid in Sunday school. So after a while, he began to ask the guards if he could have a Bible. And finally, after 2 years, they granted that request, and they gave him a Bible, and that became his saving grace. He poured into it. He looked up every passage he could find about forgiveness and love. And in that moment, his heart was changed. While many, many other prisoners of that encampment were passing away because they were tortured and just mistreated, DeShazer survived, just barely. And he vowed, once he got out and the war ended, that he was going to return to Japan as a missionary and share the love that he had found in that cell. Meanwhile, while this is all happening, Fukuda has gone back to Japan. He's, again, a rising star. And he was supposed to also be involved at the Battle of Midway, which was, again, another extremely hard-fought battle, lots of lives lost. But something delayed him. He got appendicitis, and he was pulled from the battle. Later, he was, again, supposed to be going to another battle, but a meeting came up, and he was called back. And so eventually, after the war ended, Fukuda was the only pilot in Japan who started the war from the very beginning and survived until the end. After the war was over, he was discouraged. He was ashamed of the loss. He just felt like there was no hope for his future. And one day, he got off the train in Tokyo, and on the platform, there was a man standing there who had written a book entitled, I Was a Prisoner in Japan. The title caught his attention, and he wanted to know about it, and he was also intrigued because Jacob DeShazer shared his testimony with him. And at that point, he wasn't really interested in that, but he had respect for the men who fought the Doolittle Raid, and he knew that he was part of that, and so he took the book, and he studied it, and he contemplated, and a couple days later, he was back on that platform, and this time, someone had a Bible. And so again, he took the Bible, and he began to look through it, and he came on the passage when Jesus says, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And he understood that that was him. And so his heart was turned toward Jesus as well. And those two men actually preached together some and evangelized together. He became a missionary to the States while DeShazer was a missionary in Japan. And these two men who started off a war hating each other, their lives spared at different times through the sovereignty of God, survived the war and come to know Jesus through an encounter with one another, which can only be credited back to God's sovereignty. Church, don't miss the plan that God has. Whenever life lets you down, whenever your hope is delayed, God is still sovereign. He is still working out a plan that is good and perfect. And even when we don't realize it, he is still in control and on the throne. Don't let your disappointment distract you from that fact. We'll close with this. The band can come on up. Like Gary mentioned, this is Palm Sunday. This week kicks off the Passion Week, and I think if we think about the disciples during this week, they have these huge swings of emotion, right? They're excited because Jesus has rode in, and they think that he's about to take control in a way that they believe is going to lead them out of the oppression of Rome. But ultimately what happens is they see him arrested and beaten and mocked. I have to believe at that moment that they were pretty disappointed. So much so that they abandon him and they scatter when he's arrested and put on trial. And their hope ultimately was delayed when he was crucified. But it was only delayed for 3 days because Jesus rose 3 days later. And throughout their disappointment, God was working out a plan that was perfect and good. And even when they couldn't see it, and even when they didn't understand, through their disappointment, God was still working. So church, when things happen in your life, when circumstances are not the way you want them to be, when people let you down, even when you're disappointed in God himself, do not let it distract you from the fact that in that disappointment, he is still working all things for your good. You pray with me. God, thank you for this morning. Thank you for just your love. We thank you for this message of Samuel and his life and how you just minister to him and his disappointment. God, we thank you that we can have victory over that because we know that no matter what happens, you're on the throne. God, thank you for Jesus. It's in his name we pray. Amen.